Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memory, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, also known as NASCA. My name is Tammy Shostak. I'll be your host tonight, and I'm also a survivor of child abuse. I am calling in from Pompano Beach, Florida, beautiful, beautiful area of the country, and it's a pleasure to be here with you. Tonight's show is an open mic question and answer discussion show. All the mics will be left open so we can have a rich discussion about child abuse and the issues involving, you know, our community. If you'd like to join the show, we know a lot of folks do stream in. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to have you. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. I'd like to tell you a little bit about NASCA before we get started. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're self-supporting through our own community contributions. If you'd like to donate to NASCA, we would really appreciate that, and it is tax deductible. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. First, we educate the public, especially getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. And we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Like I said, it is an open mic show tonight. We do have a professional speaker with us. It's our very own Pamela Lockridge. Pamela has a wonderful story, and she is a professional in our community. Pamela was pimped out by her mother and her second husband as a child sex slave from the age of 4 to 18. She understands the depths of the terror of the long-lasting mental anguish that comes along with this type of trauma. Her story tells of her finding complete closure in mental healing. Pamela is a social worker with a master's degree, and there are many hurting individuals listening and wanting to bring up different topics on the show and the different places for their healing journey, and we're here to help. So it's a pleasure to be here with everybody. If you'd like to join us, again, that number is 646-595-2118. We do have several people in here in our panel for the discussion, and I'll just go right down the line. Like I said, my name's Tammy, and I'm calling in from Florida. And first, I'd like to introduce Adrienne. I hope I'm not chopping up your name too badly, but she's calling in from Pennsylvania. Please tell me how to pronounce your name, dear.
Adrienne.
Adrian. I don't know. Yes. I don't know. My mind's not working well tonight. Adrian from Pennsylvania, welcome to the NASCA show. Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate the support. Next, we have Mark from Louisiana. Good evening, Mark. How are you?
Good evening, Tammy. I'm doing just fine. How about you?
I'm doing very well, a little bit tired. It's been a crazy week, but it's always a pleasure to be here on Thursday night with my support team and the community. Thank you for being here and supporting me. Mark is also my trailer. Mark, you just let me know when you're ready to host a show. You've been on these plenty of times. I don't want you to feel like you're pressured. But if you ever want to take the rim, yeah, the mic will be yours. So just let me know, my dear.
I'll let you know.
Okay. We also have a person who's called in. Thomasine is calling in from Maryland. Welcome, Thomasine. I see that you have chosen to just listen, and that's fine. But I'm going to leave your mic open in case you do want to join the discussions. You're more than welcome to just listen, and you're more than welcome to participate. We're here to support you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was such a pleasure to have you here. If you can talk on a party line among friends, you can participate in the show. It's easier than most people think it is. And I'd like to leave your mic open just in case you hear something and you want to chime in. You're more than welcome. It's a very friendly show. I know the people. I'm not sure if I've met Adrian before. I can't recall.
This is my first time.
Is this your first time? Well, welcome. Yeah. I remember my first time on the show. It can be frightening, but I promise you, it's a very loving, caring group. And most of the people who call in, almost all the people who call in, are either survivors or survivor supporters. So we're here to help each other. And we do that by having a good discussion. We do have people who stream in from all over the world. A lot of times people, they'll stream in and then they'll call in. And next thing you know, they're participating on the show. I've had that happen. And the next thing you know, they're hosting the show. So we are a community of survivors, and we're here to support each other. Just like our guest speaker, Ms. Pamela, who I will introduce now. Good evening, Pamela. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's been a kind of a crazy week for me. Most companies do budgets before the year, and we've had a whole lot of stuff going on, and I've just been slammed doing budgets for my company, so it's been cray-cray for Tammy. But it's always refreshing to be here. Well, Pamela, you know,
right.
You are our guest. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you're putting on your NASCA hat now, so just relax.
I'm a hat.
Forget about it.
That's right. I know.
Last week. Go ahead.
Last Thursday, I was so tired. I was unbelievably tired. Still proud to be here, and we had Dr. Jaime, and that was such an amazing show. I felt really energized after the last Thursday show. I know that sounds silly, but that's the way it is. Pamela, before we get started, I see Mr. Bill Murray has called in, so I'm going to open Bill's mic and introduce him. Good evening, Mr. Bill Murray. How are you?
Hi there. I just thought I would join you. I just got home from a little shopping trip with Christina, and I'm a little out of breath, but I'm here. Everything good?
Everything's good. We've got a healthy panel here. We have you. Well, you know me. God help you. You know me, Tammy from Florida. We have Pamela, who is our guest speaker from Louisiana. We have Adrian from Pennsylvania. We have Mark from Louisiana. We have Thomasine from Maryland. We have the one and only Bill Murray. And we have somebody who just popped in from a 4019 number, which I recognize, but not enough to know exactly who it is. So thank you for being here, Bill. Area code 409, who do we have the pleasure of joining us? Uh-oh.
Roberta.
Area code Roberta? I knew I recognized that number. Thank you for calling in, Roberta. Sorry about that, Mark. I know you were chiming in to see who that was. I really appreciate that. But I had an ox in the ditch, and I wanted to see who it was. So, Roberta, it's such a pleasure to have you here for joining us. And you're calling from Oklahoma. Okay.
Yes, I have a Texas number, but I'm calling from Oklahoma.
I remember you moving to Oklahoma. Well, we have a very healthy panel. Absolutely. We have a very healthy panel, so let's get started. I want to go back to Pamela. Mark, I'll leave the steering wheel back to you if somebody pops in. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to cut you off there. But let's go back to Pamela.
Okay.
Pamela, sure. Pamela, you had something a topic that you wanted to thread that you wanted to get us started with. So I'm going to turn the mic over to you, Pamela. The mic is yours.
Thank you, Tammy. I wanted to mention, and we would be remiss if we didn't, that April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, okay? And I have a website that I'd like people to go to.
We can hardly hear you. We can't hear you.
We got a little bit of static. So it's very staticky.
Hello? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you
now.
Static seems to be good. Yeah.
Can you, Bill?
It's kind of low, but yeah, go ahead. At least the static is gone.
Okay. Pardon? Okay. I just want to mention that it's National Child Abuse Prevention Month. And on the front of our NASCA website, if people would go and look at that, we're doing a fundraiser to help fundraise for NASCA. Because April is Child Awareness Abuse Month, and I'm hearing some background noise. Is anybody making some noise in the background? Okay, thank you. And I wanted to tell you that the Children's Bureau is within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which funds the National Child Abuse Prevention Month initiative each April on the Child Welfare Information Gateway. And by data about children, and right now the data that's coming in is 2019, because data takes time to catch up to the year, because they have to collect the data, and by the time they collect it, it's 2 years later. So I'm going to tell you some of the statistics of the National Child Abuse Prevention Month, which is also under the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services site, is approximately 2 million children received prevention services in 2019. Approximately 1.3 million children received post-response services such as family preservation, family support, or foster care because of the needs discovered during the investigation. And during the federal fiscal year of 2019, fewer than one quarter, 22.9% of confirmed maltreatment victims were removed from their home because of an investigation. So that's a lot of, that's a high percent of maltreatment victims. That's a quarter of them are in the 2 million range. A quarter of those would be, you know, a quarter of 2 million, which would be about, somebody do the math.
500,000.
Why don't you do the math?
Half a million.
About what? Half a million?
Half a million. 500,000.
Okay, all right. I was getting close there. So that we want to help with people doing is getting to talk and speaking up to prevent child sexual abuse. And that's what NASCA is about. One of the major things is prevention. So one of the things I came across when I was looking is people often ask, what is child abuse? And it says about half of the people in a recent survey couldn't explain sexual abuse. Child sexual abuse is any sexual activity with a child by an adult or adolescent These acts can include sexual touching, touching a person's penis, vagina, oral sex, or intercourse, and sexual behaviors that do not include touching, like peeping, flashing, showing pornography to a child. And sometimes an older child may sexually abuse a younger one. So it's important that we, you know, get with the public and let them know, you know, what it is exactly that they need to be looking for. So I'm going to go let Tammy go to the panel and see what they think about these statistics and the definition of child abuse and child protection.
Sure. Thank you for that information, Pamela. This is Tammy.
Sure.
And I'll get us started. It's, you know, those are some overwhelming numbers, needless to say. We, you know, the stats I don't think will ever be correct because so many people do not report them. So many kids don't report them. Boys don't report a lot of the sexual abuse. It is something for us to look at to understand, you know, just how much of a pandemic it is. But, you know, it will never be fully reported, unfortunately. But we have to have some kind of numbers to understand what we're dealing with in this world. It's tough, you know, when Tammy Schaffstall, you know, has to face the fact that I'm a statistic. You know, we are all part of that statistic, and that's painful to realize. You know, I'm a statistic. But the reality is that, you know, I did endure child abuse as a child. A little bit of sexual abuse, but most of mine was physical abuse and mental anguish and that sort of thing. I guess I had a little bit of a buffet. You know, I had everything happen to me, but neglect. I was never neglected. So I am a statistic in many ways. In the flesh, you know, I have to deal with it. You know, I've had to deal with it all my life, and I've had to understand, you know, what happened to me and learn how to heal from it. And that's not an easy thing to do, but I think, you know, understanding the statistics and understanding that we're not alone and understanding what happened to us is a huge part of healing. We're lucky. Everybody on this panel is lucky because we have somewhat of an understanding, and we have faced the music of what has happened to us, and we're seeking help. We're seeking out others. So many of us, you know, take a blind eye. They don't realize it or really haven't faced what happened to them. And how can you heal from that? You know, how can you understand it and learn from it and heal from it? It's a work in progress. I think it's a work in progress for all of us. It's not easy at times. You know, I've come a long way in my healing process. I'm not where I was 5 years ago. I'm certainly not where I was 10 years ago. You know, every day here's hoping. So that's my thoughts, and I'll give everybody else an opportunity to chime in. I'm done.
Who's next?
Anyone else?
Adrian?
Adrian, what do you think about all this?
I think the numbers are really high and bad, but I think about what you said about I've had a lot of abuse in my life. And some of the things that you were talking about, it's definitely not really reported the way it should be. Because as of right now, I'm going through something right now as far as, you know, stuff needing to be reported. And if you don't have enough of the information, I mean, you can call the number, but, you know, they want you to have this and this, and if you don't have it. So I'm, like, wondering what the proper steps are to make the report and who should be making the reports. Because you made a good point about things need to be changed and better reported.
Well, I want to pop over to Bill and give him an opportunity since he has a website. There's a lot of wealth of information on there. Bill, can you want to talk a little bit about our website as one venue and maybe some others? I know I'm probably putting you on the spot.
That's quite all right. You know, our basic mission is twofold. It's to educate the public, and it's to help fellow survivors, especially newcomers, who have not yet started their what we call healing journey. The numbers that were quoted by the 1919 thing, unfortunately, they've been lumping everything together and calling it maltreatment. It's not that useful to me when you call everything altogether maltreatment, because I would rather see how many are neglected, how many are emotionally scarred, how many are violently beaten, and how many are sexually assaulted in individual categories. That is really much more helpful than maltreatment, which to me doesn't mean much. It just means not treated very well. It doesn't really, you know, there's no oomph to it. And I suspect that all the statistics are low. Some of them statistically very low compared to what's really going on in the world. The point is that, you know, if you're shocked by 2 million, how shocked would you be by 6 million? Because it's probably three times that many. And one of the comments that was made earlier is that, you know, the HHS only knows about those crimes, and these are all crimes, that are reported. And, of course, so much of it goes unreported. And if it's not reported, it's not listed. So, you know, you have to be careful about how you use statistics. But I can tell you that when we say 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys, that's far more than 2 million kids, right? There might be 30 million kids in the country. And, you know, so 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 is, you know, say 20% at least to that, 20 to 25%. And that's the sexual assault kids. See, so your numbers are really not that accurate when you lump everything together and call them maltreatment. But, you know, statistics are usable in different ways. I heard a startling statistic just the other day that we have 88,000 open cases of missing people. Now, that includes adults, but a lot of those missing are kids. 88,000 at any one time, but that's the FBI's rough statistics that they're looking for. That's a big number, you know, and these are all people that they're not even in the statistics of who's been abused, because we don't know what happened to them. They just disappeared. Of course, unfortunately, when it's a child that disappears, it's commonly a murder. And that, again, enters to a different statistic. So, I mean, that's kind of the ultimate child abuse, is to abduct and kill a child, which happens all the time. But so you just have to be careful how you use these statistics. They are startling no matter how you present them, though. And I appreciate the discussion on it tonight.
Adrian and Bill, I'd like to tell you this is Adrian's first time calling in, so we do have a first time caller. I'm really excited about that, and I know Bill wanted to. I'm sure Bill wants to welcome you to the NASCA show as well, Adrian. Thank you for being here. One of the things you mentioned is who should report it. You know, we have mandated reporters. You know, that's a big question. You know, families should report it. They don't. You know, we know, you know, out of the, you know, 90% of the children who know their abuser, and what is it, 67% that we, you know, one of the older statistics, it's a family member. You know, family members cover that up. You know, how can family members cover that up? It's getting better, but it's still not right. You know, years ago when they come in beaten and battered, you know, the teacher would turn a blind eye. You know, they don't want to get involved. You know, now teachers are mandated reporters. There's a lot of programs out there in the schools now, and that's a whole different discussion, you know, where people come in and educate the children, and the children are learning to speak up. We have, what was that girl's name? She used to be part of NASCA, Erin. That's a whole big discussion, but she'll pop something on there every once in a while. Child turns in principal after participating in an Aaron Myers training session in somewhere in America. She was trying to get the law passed, and then that was the big question. Well, the law's passed. Now how are you going to implement it? She'll pop something in there every once in a while, so there must be a few training sessions going on. But that's a whole different topic in itself.
Well, a better effort for this training is darkness to light. Much better training. Darkness to light, and you can find them by typing in D2L and darkness to light, or you can use the whole name. But the point is, the organization is all about training, and it'll go out. It's countrywide, nationwide, and they go out to groups when they're invited to do so. They don't step in on anybody's toes. But if you're invited, if they're invited, they do a very nice job of doing presentations to groups. They like to speak to 10 people or more, 10, 25, 35, whatever. They do a wonderful job. So darkness to light, I'd strongly recommend. As far as getting information about what child abuse is, how prevention works, which is teaching children themselves about what to be aware of, and intervention, which is what we just said, who's supposed to report? Well, some people are, when you say mandated, it means there's a legal responsibility to report. But frankly, everybody should report. If you're talking about who should report, everyone. These are crimes.
Right.
And they're crimes against children who cannot report themselves. Children can't report. So it's really everybody's responsibility. And in certain categories, it's legally responsibility of someone. But frankly, certainly any adult who finds out or has a suspicion of child abuse ought to be reporting it. So that's what I would say about that.
Right. Well, thank you for that, Bill. You know, a lot of it, too, and I want to go to the panel because I don't want to hog the show. And I see Darlene has joined us. Welcome, Darlene. I was looking for William, but I don't see him on here. But, you know, a lot of it is breaking the cycle. Good evening, Darlene. How are you?
Heard of Vivian. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for joining the show.
We have a problem.
Okay. When I see you, I see William.
Well, I want to welcome Adrian to listen at all, and I hope he continues to call back and give us input on these things. And today I was startled, you know, with what's going on, you know, about trying to save somebody that in Pennsylvania, one of our ambassadors, you know, because of a boy that was beaten so bad and raped, 7-year-old, and they're trying to save him now. They returned him back to that after the hospital. They returned him back to that family.
Right. Wow.
Yes.
Happens all the time.
How horrible is that?
My God. I understand.
And then they want you to tell, and we're supposed to tell, and we're supposed to help. But how can we help when the system ain't helping us, help them?
Wow.
Right.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Darlene. We also have Roberta, who has called back in. Roberta, you may have been participating, but I don't think you've been on a Thursday show in a while, and it's such a pleasure to have you back. What do you think about all this, Roberta?
Well, I enjoy listening. I haven't been on very much. Kind of been in therapy and doing some recovery work, and, you know, it's just I've been trusting my creator to guide me through things. And, you know, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, I can relate to what she was saying about, you know, helping them but then giving them right back to where they came from. And I can relate a lot to that. You know, and then plus, you know, when the family covers up things and, you know, you know, I don't know. It's just, I guess it's by the grace of God I'm still alive, you know. I don't know. It's like, you know, I'm just glad that, I mean, it's sad to hear that they're still missing and, you know, children and, you know, I guess what I'm working on personally in my life right now is forgiving. And, you know, because it's only hurting myself when I don't forgive. And there must be a reason why I'm still here. So, you know, but, you know, I was also, while y'all were talking about all the child abuse, I was thinking about spousal abuse, too, and how, you know, it just, you know, when there's violence in the home, when there's violence, you know, then spousal abuses and the children and everyone's abuse, it's, you wonder sometimes, but anyway, that's all I have. I'm just glad I'm here, and thanks for accepting my call.
Well, we're glad you're here, too. You know, it's a vicious cycle, and that's why, you know, I think what we have to do as a society, in my opinion, is work on breaking the cycle. Because you're right. You know, I was abused as a child and then went into an abusive marriage. And we've talked about this several times on the show. You know, when you are a survivor of child abuse, particularly the kind that I went through where you're beaten and battered and put down, and you get into a healthy relationship, it's like a foreign, country to you. You're not used to that. You're uncomfortable, you know, and then you question it, or you assume that everybody's going to treat you like that. And it's just, it becomes a comfort level. We've got to break that cycle. And you're absolutely right. You know, when you've got a spouse beating another spouse, and it could go either way, and the children are witness to this, that's child abuse too. You know, and, you know, I saw one talking about statistics, you know, that children who watch spousal abuse or domestic abuse, they, even though they don't endure it, you know, the effects of them, they become very cynical. So, and I've seen it with my own children. So it's just a vicious cycle that we've got to break, and I think that's our biggest opportunity to break it, so we're not passing it from generation to generation to generation. And it can be done. You know, we have people on this panel who have broken the cycle. So there you go.
Yeah, sometimes also like the spouse, the head of the household, can be whipping on the woman and then whipping on the children too, you know, or sexually abusing the woman and sexually abusing the children.
Right. Unfortunately, that happens. And then, you know, like my mother took a blind eye. So, well, thank you for sharing that. We do have, I want to make sure, you know, give a shout out to Thomasine from Maryland. I know she's just listening. But Thomasine, just know that your mic is open if you wanted to participate. We haven't heard from Mark in a while. Let's see what Mark thinks about all this. Mark, what do you think about all this?
I agree with what some of you guys are saying, that this is a pandemic. You know everyone calls COVID a pandemic, but you can't put a mask on this. You can't stay six feet apart from child abuse. It's out there and it's happening, and it's sad. Mm-hmm. It is a pandemic, and it's even, as we have in the mission statement, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic. So it's out there, and this being Child Abuse Awareness Month, I would encourage people who are listening to be aware, you know, learn. And NASCA's website has a lot of information that will help you and teach you and show you where to go. And I wanted to make a point that Bill said about darkness to light. About 3 years ago, Pam had organized a little seminar here in the town where we live and invited the Prevent Child Abuse Louisiana to come up, and they taught the Darkness to Light program. You know, they had the books and the information, and that was the program they used to teach us when they came here. So it is a good program. It teaches a lot, and it's informative. And I just wanted to let you know to check it out. Another thing, you know, I know talking about statistics, you know, I come from athletic background, so we're always hearing statistics and everything. But statistics can be deceiving, and yet, you know, they don't tell the whole picture. But one statistic that really blew my mind, and I think you mentioned it early, Tammy, is that over 90% of kids abused know who their abuser is. And that, when I first started understanding this and getting involved, that blew me away. That means if we line up 10 kids that are abused, 9 of them knew who it was. And that just doesn't seem right. I mean, that means it was your parent, your uncle, grandfather, you know, nowadays, priests, coaches, you know, teachers. I mean, we here in Louisiana there have been a couple of teachers arrested for it. It's just, it is a pandemic. And I just suggest everyone learn and be aware and learn the signs of child abuse when you see a children. And like Bill said, we all should report. There's no list that says only you should. I mean, everyone should. And the more people are aware, we can put a dent in this.
Right. Well, thank you for that. You're absolutely right. It's a pandemic issue. Let's go back to our guest speaker, Pamela. Pamela, what do you think about what all you've heard from your panel?
Oh, are we going to see what Adrienne has to say? I don't think she's had a turn to talk.
Yeah, she has. We made sure she had a turn to talk, but we can definitely go back to Adrienne. Adrienne, do you have something that you want to add?
No, I'm just learning a lot right now. I just want to listen, but I'm just thankful to get some more information.
Okay.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we started with Adrienne, actually, and she brought up some good points. You know, Adrienne's question was, you know, who was supposed to report it? What do you do about it? And that's kind of where we got it. So,
The reason I had brought that question up is, go
ahead. Hello. Go ahead, Adrienne. Then we'll go back to Pam.
I brought that question up because basically I know of someone who was supposedly reporting the child abuse and they didn't do it. So I was just, you know, trying to bring up in conversation that sometimes they don't do what they're supposed to do.
Right. Bill, do you want to respond to that with Adrienne, or you know, what do you do when you know? I guess if who all knows. I mean, I don't know what the issue is. You know, if everybody knows and you're the one who's supposed to make the phone call and they didn't make the phone call, somebody needs to make the phone call.
I don't know. When we talk about mandated reporters, we're talking about people who, if they don't identify who a child is that they knew about ahead of time and the case is found out, might be punished, but very infrequently. They hardly ever get punished, and the punishments are so low that there is no impetus. You know, it's not like you're going to spend time in a federal prison if you don't report child abuse. It just doesn't happen. So it's a misdemeanor offense in most cases, even though it's on the books. There's a lot of stuff on the books that people don't follow, and this is one of them. Now, there are occasional cases where someone is prosecuted because they knew ahead of time about a child that was in trouble and didn't take corrective steps, and corrective steps is really just turning a tip over to the appropriate authorities. That's really all reporting is. If you do that, then the weight of the responsibility falls on the authority, whether it's CPS or the police department or, you know, whatever it is you reported to, because they don't expect the teacher to go into the house. They don't want that. It'll be a separate, you know, person's job, a social worker's job generally, nor frankly, even if police find out about it, do they expect the police to go into the house, or less and less they are, because again, you have to be trained in responding to child abuse in order to even recognize it first and then know what to do about it. So our best recourse is the better child protective services organizations that are out there. But unfortunately, as Darlene said, some are really failing our kids because they'll do at least a meager inspection and turn the kid right back to the parent that abused them. It happens a lot. So, and the last thing I want to say is, you know, I've been using the word pandemic about child abuse forever, for a long, long time. Kind of pissed me off when they started talking about this pandemic we were entering called COVID-19. But I'll just say this. I'll say it this way. When the pandemic for COVID-19 has been handled, the pandemic for child abuse will be raging still. It won't stop. You know, and it's up to us to do something about that eventually.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you, Bill. Great answer. Great response. Let's go to Pamela. Let's go back to Pamela. Pamela, what are your thoughts about what everybody has shared?
Well, Bill was talking about the statistics, and I just want to tell him that he's 100% right on. When I was reading those statistics off of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, this data is only provided or funded by state and local agents, CPS agencies. But there's other work that thousands of community-based agencies do that is not reported. You know, the statistics I was saying was those that the state and CPS received. So, you know, we don't know what other agencies out there or they from CPS.
Right.
Right, Bill?
That's right. The best study I've ever seen was done in 2008. That's a long time ago. It's 12 years ago. It was done by the CDC, and it was a set of statistics that was presented in separate categories, the different kinds of child abuse in separate categories. But it also studied other things like the cost of child abuse, because, you know, you always hear how expensive it would be to fix the system and to add more support to the kids and blah, 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 right? Even back then, in 2008, the CDC estimated that the cost of child abuse was $28 billion a year. Obviously, it's gone up since then. Now, that includes all kinds of statistics like incarceration of criminals who are convicted, law enforcement efforts, treatment for people, and so forth. It's all the categories lumped together. But the point is, there's a lot of money in the system, and only a little bit of that money would be needed to send in a different direction, perhaps in awareness, you know, and kind of teaching all of us on a mass scale in some way, what is child abuse? What are we looking for? How do we talk to our kids? Where do we report it? Boy, if we just spent, you know, I don't, a tiny little 1% of the $500 billion would be tremendous, you know, but that's not how we think. So that's 2008, and it was a major study that I don't think has ever been reported. And the studies that have happened since, the studies that have happened since then did lump everything together with every other kind of child abuse. And by the way, just as a final thought, that's where we get the statistics that are on our cards, 2008 statistics that were deemed to be accurate, and that was like 42 million American adults who had experienced child abuse as children. That's sexual assaults. 42 million. So, I mean, I'd say we're probably up to around, you know, 60 million now. I mean, the number just keeps growing. So, yeah, that's where that number comes from. It hasn't been calculated since, as far as I know.
I remember back in 2016, Bill, I don't know if you, maybe 2015, we were looking for some statistics to update our website, and that's when they came. All we could come up with was the maltreatment, and I remember that did enrage all of us, you know, because the statistics themselves, and Pamela, I don't want you to get the wrong idea, because we really appreciate you bringing up those statistics that you found. I mean, that's, I don't want to take from that, because it gives us an idea, you know, at least some idea of what we're dealing with. But the statistics that we found.
This is a really important discussion. But, I appreciate Pamela bringing it up.
Absolutely. I appreciate you bringing that very much. But the statistics we found, it's about 2015, maybe 16, were so watered down and so homogenized that it was frustrating to us. And we were simply, you know, looking to update our statistics. And when you pull up statistics, you know, one of the first things that comes up is NASCA.
Yeah. Very quickly, let me quickly give you a piece of an anecdote from that period of time. When we were looking to make sure our statistics were accurate and possibly, you know, change them to reflect whatever was the current statistics, find it, as you said. So we went to the CDC, and we asked them what had happened. Now, you have to understand, the CDC's study had been copied by the FBI, by the Justice Department, by all the police agencies, and so forth. So everybody was calling the statistics the same at a certain point, like 42 million. But even the CDC couldn't find their previous statistics. Now, I don't understand that. But we had a couple of people from the CDC go into their archives and stuff in the past and try to find those files that relate, or those older pages that talked about the 42 million. They couldn't find them. So it almost felt to me at that point, and again, this is going back 5 years or more, it felt like somebody whitewashed the statistics, like they wiped them. And boy, yeah, it makes it really
tough
for
that.
People like all of us now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Absolutely. We hadn't heard from Darlene. I know Darlene popped in kind of at the end of that, but I want to make sure she's included. Darlene, what do you think about all this?
I think that's rather interesting. And 24 hours a day, you know, people could end up calling a 1-800 child for help to report anything. So that is one of the numbers that people can actually call. And
1-800-4-CHILD.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. The number for a child.
Right.
Right.
And so I wanted to add that to that, you know, because that's a number that is provided to try to help in that situation.
Well, you know, one of the concerns to me, Darlene, and you made this comment the first go around, was, you know, you were dealing with a child, or I couldn't understand if you were directly dealing with it or if you were, you know, you knew of. It doesn't really matter, but you know how they return them back to the home, and you know that's concerning to me because it puts the kid in even more danger.
Yeah,
you know,
the
because.
Father.
They'll
yeah,
take it out.
The
they'll take it out on the kids. So they're humiliated. Yeah.
Yes, and the stepfather had beat him and raped the 7-year-old boy, and he was getting out of the hospital, and they put him back in the home with that abuser, and there's another kid involved in the home as well.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
So one of our NASCA people are trying to get help with that right now.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, I've heard many prayers to you. Let's go back to Pamela. Pamela, what do you think? You're our guest speaker, so what do you think about what all you've heard?
Well, you know, what we need to do is get people to understand that, you know, you must talk about it. And I wanted to go back to what Adrian was talking about trying to get this woman to, you know, give enough information so that it can be are these children that are being abused and trafficked that she knows or has a gut feeling about, but she's not willing to do that, and she's the sister of the mother. So I don't understand how that sister doesn't care enough for those children, or maybe she's scared to report. But I told Adrian you can report anonymously if you need to.
Well, I called the 800.
Go ahead, Adrian.
I called the 800 number on the situation, and they said I didn't have enough information. So then I called the sister, and she said that I guess she is scared because after they sent the nurse didn't report it and put it in the files, they sent the child home, and then when she got home, he beat up the mother. And as of right now, that's why I couldn't really get in touch with the sister because she was over there. But it's a bad situation. I don't understand why the nurse didn't report it, and they sent the little boy home. It's bad now. Well, it's bad then, but I mean, and I did try
And Carol did give me some money, and the lady did call me from Angels or something, but it just didn't work out. And
well, I suggested to Adrian, this Pamela, that she don't pressure the girl, but just let her know that NASCA's here and there is a number she can call, and just, you know, talk to her about the children. Get on the level about the children and what they're feeling. You know, don't talk about, you know, what's not being done. Just reach her, you know, her emotional level about these children that I'm sure she cares about.
Yeah, I'll do that. Get it together.
But I found some information on, you know, speaking up, and one of the things is trusting your gut. And some of the situations that this these people found was these callers called into a helpline, and they said, my 33-year-old brother stares at teenage girls and boys at family parties. He constantly comments on their changing bodies. You know, that could be an uneasy thing. My neighbor doesn't have kids, and he's always inviting the children on the block into his house for treats. My 16-year-old daughter stopped hanging out with her friends. Now she spends most of her time with an 11-year-old boy. And my child becomes very quiet and seems frightened when we visit with my brother-in-law. Children and their behavior, and, you know, just seeing the signposts of what's going on, you know, and trusting our gut. And it was also saying that that one of the other things we can do, that was trust your gut, but one of the other things that I thought was unique that they talked about is begin a journal. If it often helps to write down what you have seen or heard, even if it seems like nothing. Each of the journal pages should include what you heard or saw, when it happened, where it happened, who was involved. And when you talk with someone about their behaviors, it can help you refer back to what you wrote. So if you're any kind of a person like us that, you know, may think that we're seeing something but we're not sure, we should start a journal about it. You know, that's being proactive.
Thank you for that information, Pamela.
Sure.
Well, it is 9 o'clock, 8:54, so we've got about 30 minutes left. We've had some really rich discussions. We did lose Roberta. I'm Tammy. I'm calling in from Florida. We have Pamela from Louisiana, Adrian from Pennsylvania, Mark from Louisiana, Thomasine, I hope you're enjoying the show. If there's anything you want to add, your mic is open. You're welcome to join us. You're welcome to listen as well. We have Bill in California, and we have Darlene in Tennessee. So we still have a very healthy panel. Thank you. Thank you, Roberta, if you're still listening, for calling in. We really appreciate it. I hope to hear back from you soon. So we've got 30 minutes left. Does anybody else have anything on their mind in what we've discussed, or does anybody have another topic that is on their heart that they may want to talk about tonight? If not, I can get us started if you'd like. Or Pamela, I'll go back to you, being you're our guest speaker. Is there anything else on your heart that you'd like to bring up before we move on?
Yes, I've seen a tip sheet that talks about signs of possible, excuse me, let me get some water here, warning signs of possible sexual abuse in a child's behavior, and behaviors. And some of those behaviors are nightmares or other sleep problems without an explanation, seems distracted or distant at odd times, has sudden change in eating habits. They refuse to eat, lose or drastically increases appetite, or has trouble swallowing. Sudden mood swings, rage, fear, insecurity, or withdrawal leave clues that seem likely to provoke a discussion about sexual issues, writes, draws, plays, or dreams of sexual or frightening images, I remember one of our guests came on one night and was saying that he would used to go into the house and write and draw pictures of penises as a child. Develops mm-hmm. new or unusual fear of certain people or places. You know, whenever you take a child to somebody's house and they don't want to go around that person that they used to like or go around, you know, that could be a definite warning sign. That Jesus to talk about a secret shared, talked about a new older friend, suddenly has money, toys, or other gifts without reason, thinks of self or body as repulsive, dirty, or bad, and exhibits adult-like sexual behaviors, language, and knowledge. So these are just, you know, some... you know,
yeah.
behavior
Reply.
Signs. Behavioral
yeah.
signs.
You're absolutely right. We have someone else who has joined us, 763. Let me open that mic and see who that is. Hang on one second.
Okay.
We have a new caller with area code 763. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
This is Victoria Kelly.
Hi, Victoria. How are
Hi.
You?
Good. Good. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, that's okay. We're just glad
yeah.
you joined us. We've got 30 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the NASCA show.
Thank you.
Well, you know, you just joined us, so you hadn't had an opportunity to hear some of the discussion. So I just wanted to welcome you to the show. And,
well, thank you.
So far what we've – absolutely. So far – Pamela just shared with us, she had a listing of some possible red flag signs to look for if a child is being sexually abused.
We've had
a pretty rich discussion. Yeah, we've had a pretty rich discussion tonight. So thank
mm-hmm.
you for joining us.
Yeah.
Well, Pamela, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we go, before we move? I'll tell you what, let's do this. If anybody has any comments that they'd like to make, we've got a little bit of background noise. Anybody who would like to make any comments on the list of possible
yeah.
flags that Pamela shared, the mics are open.
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead, Bill.
If you'll notice what she shared, these are things that are changes in a person's behavior. That's what you're looking for. And by the way, you know, it's quite natural for children to go through several of these just because they're growing older, they're becoming adolescents and so forth. The point is that if you see one of them, that might not be such a big deal. If you see three of them or five of them, it's worth getting into. And basically, I recommend you talk to the child in a non-threatening way, not asking them, have you been abused sexually? No, you don't say that. You ask how they're doing, and you can back into it. If you ask a child to talk to you about what's going on in their life, but don't accuse them of anything and don't accuse their mother. They, you know, a lot of times when kids are being abused, we've already said this several times, it's their family. They don't want to rat on their family, right? And they certainly don't, and they may not want to say anything because they'll be punished if the family figures out they've said something. So the point being that, you don't want to jump in there with only one of these, but if you see several of them, that's a pretty good indication that something might be going on. By talking to the child or talking to neighbors or whatever you do, that's how you gain a suspicion. Because just seeing these behaviors is not enough. You have to have something more than that in order to report to, like, CPS or the police and so forth. You have to have a little more than that. But on the other hand, we're not vigilantes, so we let those people who are trained to do it do their job. But they can't be everywhere at all times, and that's where it becomes important that we are reporting it. And finally, you know, it's not just behaviors, it's also performance, because some of the things that weren't listed there were things like a dip in grades, a sudden change in attitude about school, or some favorite activity, maybe Boy Scouting. All of a sudden, the kid doesn't want to go scouting anymore. You know, what do you mean? You've always loved scouting, right? And when I was a behavioral problem because I couldn't pay attention. All I could think about was what was going on to me in secret. And if I'm sitting in the classroom in school, in grade school, I'm out the window with my attention span. I have none, zero. And I could care less about homework or studying. You know what I mean? So these are, it's performance as well as attitude or behavior that you're looking for. Changes in those things.
Well, you know, I've heard, thank you for that, Bill. I really appreciate that. And I've heard story after story. You know, I go to school all day and then I come home. We've had several people on the show. They come home and they're being pimped out at night. And so they don't get any rest. They're at school all day. They're having to sexually perform all night. So in some cases, so the family can make money. And then they're just exhausted. Plus the mental anguish that they're going through, they're physically exhausted. And then the mental anguish they're going through as well. That's a huge sign, you know, and this, we've talked about this many times on the show too, you know, that uncle, somebody, I can't remember who mentioned it, but you know, if they don't want to go over that uncle's house or they don't want to be hugged by that uncle, you know, don't make them, don't force them, you know, that should be a red flag too. You know, it's, a lot of times, you know, if it seems too good to be true, a lot of times it is. You know, I remember we had this guy, you know, I don't want to tell anybody else's story, but I have a family member who, you know, she was sexually abused. And, you know, and then a lot of times you have multiple perpetrators. And then it's real easy for us to think we have a stamp on our head because this one abused me, this one abused me, this one abused me. Three different people abused me. It must be me. So this particular person had a friend of the family I found out later on was abusing this person as well, and he always volunteered to babysit. You know, I was always locked outside. You know, that's one thing. You know, they would be in the house and they would be, you know, doing things, and you know, a neighbor and this family member would be inside with this guy named Danny, and they'd lock me out. But he was always willing to babysit. And my mother and them thought it was great because, you know, they could go out to dinner and this nice family friend could babysit. You know, the whole time, you know, he was abusing, you know, two girls. So that's a telltale sign.
Absolutely.
So, and what do you do about it? I mean, Bill's right. You know, we've had some really good discussions tonight. Bill's right. I mean, a teacher, it's not the teacher's responsibility to go in there, you know, or like, Adrian shared with this nurse, you know, did she report it? I guess that's what's going, maybe, you know, did she report it and not get anywhere, Adrian, or did she just not even report it? I mean, because sometimes you got your hands, I'll tell you a story. I worked at a luxury hotel in Palm Beach, Florida. Beautiful, luxury, beautiful, one of the most prestigious hotels around. Well, I know what to look for. You know, I've been in this, and I walked by a bedroom door, and I heard a kid screaming bloody murder. And I remember hearing the mama going, shh, shh. And, you know, later on when I started investigating this, you know, they always kept the, you know, do not disturb sign was always on the door. I went and reported it. I went and reported it to the general manager, and I went and reported it to the security guy. Well, after I reported it, there's nothing left I could do. They didn't take me seriously, you know, and, you know, I would go, the room was right next to mine, and I heard the kid say, why did you have to be so mean? I could just hear it in this child's voice. Every fiber in my body told me that child was being abused in there. And I reported it, and no one took me seriously. I mean, I still have thoughts about that kid. You know, what do you do? Where do you turn? You know? If I called the cops, I would have lost my job right there. You know, I mean, I went through the proper process. Well, what do you do? That's my thought.
Absolutely. It's not cut, Pamela, it's not cut and dried, is it, Tammy? It's you know, too much grace sometimes to really figure things out. And that's why I like that thing that I was talking about journaling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you should journal that and, you know, and what you did in case something happened to her. You know, something did, somebody else recorded it, you know, and then you have two notes that match.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But, yeah, some more typical signs of younger children. Child might start behaving like a younger child and start bedwetting or thumb sucking. Some younger children might have new words for private body parts. Some might resist removing clothes when appropriate times, like bath, bed, toileting, and diapering. Ask
mm-hmm.
other children behave sexually or play sexual games. Mimics adult-like sexual behaviors with toys or stuffed animals. Wetting and soiling accidents unrelated to toilet training. So
right.
those are some more typical younger children. Now, there's more typical in adolescents. There could be self-injury, cutting and burning, inadequate personal hygiene, drug and alcohol abuse, sexual promiscuity, running away from home, depression, anxiety, suicide attempts, fear of intimacy or closeness, and compulsive eating or dieting.
Right. Well,
it's,
you know,
like, it's,
you know,
like Bill said. Well, it's like uh-huh. Bill said, though, just one of those alone wouldn't say abuse. But
right.
it might
yeah.
be who to check into it.
Yeah, and the second list you just read are for kids that are a little older, because there are separate things that, you know, adolescent kids and teenage kids get into, like the drinking and the promiscuity and so forth, that, you know, grade school kids can't even, you know, do, can't think about. But they are changes, again, in behavior and attitudes. That's and in performance. These are the things you look for, and you can have big swings, and big swings is a pretty good indicator, especially if the kid was at one time doing well in school and got along with people, and all of a sudden their grades drop dramatically, and they're not socializing anymore. You know, that's a big one in both categories,
right.
frankly.
Absolutely. Adrian, you know, one thing that I'd want to just throw out there, sometimes, like when I lived in Columbia, South Carolina, there was an advocacy center called the Dickerson Center for Abused Children. And what this, and there should be more advocacy centers. You know, my recommendation is look around your area and see if there are any agencies that you can report this to. And that's exactly what this agency did, is they gathered the information. It's pretty incredible, because it was a building. It was donated. It was donated as a house. And there were several rooms in there where it was like a one-stop advocacy center where they would take in the information. They would do the forensic investigation. They had a room upstairs that looked like a gynecologist's office where they would do examinations, where the kid didn't have to be shuffled around and go to this agency and that agency and where do you go. So sometimes, there need to be more, but sometimes there are advocacy centers like the Dickerson Center for Abused Children that might be a resource to you. So look in your area, and you can report it confidentially. And, you know, there are, and it depends on your area, you know, there may be some opportunities for an advocacy center to start up an investigation. May not be, but it's worth a try.
Okay. I'll look into that.
Let's go to Victoria. Victoria's calling in from Minnesota. Victoria, I want to make sure you have an opportunity to participate. Thank you for calling in. What do you think about all this conversation?
Well, my opinion is that no matter what the stake is to yourself, that if a child is being abused, you might be the only one that knows about it. And no matter what the risk to you in reporting it, I believe that people should. That's my own opinion. I know that there are many components to sometimes reporting, but
mm-hmm.
I used to work when I was 15, I'm 58 now, at a mission for children. And these kids would come up to me and they'd sit on my lap. we would have, since it was a mission, we'd sing things like, you know, "This Little Light of Mine" and "Jesus Loves Me" and all that, you know, and then we'd feed them lunch. We'd go pick them up from all over a real bad area in Minneapolis. And anyway, I had these kids coming up to me and saying things like, "It's really cold outside when my mom brings somebody over, you know, I mean, we're talking neglect. And I have to sit outside and sometimes I don't have shoes on and the snow's out there and, you know, or I wish my uncle wouldn't take me in the bedroom and do this or that, you know. And I once tried to report it and things. And one time I had even talked to a nun later on when I was doing some advocacy work. And I said, "What would you do if a child came to you?" And she said, "We would tell them to go home and pray for that person." And it just made me want to start throwing up. And at the time when I was 15, I was being molested. And since I didn't know what to do for myself, you know, to how to get help for myself, I had no idea how to get help for these kids. No idea whatsoever. And they were just starving for attention. You know, there wasn't enough lap to put the kids on that wanted to be, you know, wanted to come and tell me things, that wanted to, you know, just be hugged in a nurturing way. And I don't know, I felt like at least somebody in their life was giving them a positive, you know, positive reassurance that they were wonderful kids, and, you know, they had somebody to tell, you know, and I personally couldn't do anything about it because back then things were different, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it just, like, I don't remember who was talking there, I didn't get the name, how you think back about those kids, you know. And it's kind of haunting to think that these kids are in those situations and the things that they were saying were just tremendously horrible. It's just unbearable.
You know what?
Go ahead, Bill.
Every time somebody reports it is important, whether or not something occurs at that stage or not officially.
Yeah.
Because over time, it's not at all unusual that we as children tried to tell, and it falls on what I call deaf ears, and then we try to tell, and nobody understands, and then we try to tell. In other words, what I'm saying is it can take several instances of reporting before the right person hears it, and by then there is a bit of a record that, you know, people have called in on this kid three times already. Maybe the fourth time now, we ought to go look into it. You know, that matters. So don't not report because you're not sure anything's going to be done. It could not happen because of your report, but hey, 3 years from now, your report could become extremely important as part of the record. So do report.
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, like with my case, you know, I was at a hotel just hearing a kid scream on the other side of the door, which was a high-profile hotel. And when I went to my general manager, I remember him telling me, "Well, how do you know this kid wasn't being spanked? You know, you have no proof." You know, and he said, "Well, go report it to the security guy." And I went and reported, and I got it. I mean, he did a report. But, you know, there wasn't enough there, you know, at this luxury hotel to call the police and say, "You know, my controller hears a kid screaming on the other side of the door," you know, but still, I mean, in my fiber, I heard the scream and I heard it in the kid's voice. I heard it in the kid's voice. And like Victoria said, it's haunting, you know, it's haunting. So, and I think that's really good advice for our new caller, Adrian, is, you know, If you have an opportunity, and I don't know exactly what the situation is other than what you've shared, it does matter when we report. So I agree with Bill. You know, it does build a pattern. it builds a written record. You know,
yeah,
maybe the right person would hear it. Yeah, go ahead.
I was in a group for incest survivors, and what we did was we made up blue ribbons, and we put on them, "It's okay to tell." And we went to different schools and passed them out. And one of the things we told kids is that if one person doesn't believe you or doesn't help you, keep telling till somebody does.
Right.
Keep
right.
telling, you know. And I think that's an important message to get across to kids, that just because one person isn't going to do anything about it, you tell as many
right.
people as you can, you know.
Right. Well,
and,
you know,
with my son, he was acting out. And like Bill was talking about, my son could not focus on anything at school. You know, so he was
right.
labeled a bad kid. He was labeled a behavior problem. And, you know, he was acting out. And I think part of it was because, you know, once he would, you know, act out or be violent or whatever, kids would stay away from him. And that way, I think he believed, because this was kind of his behavior until he got help, that that kept people away. And if people were kept away, then they wouldn't hurt him, because he finally got away from his dad by pounding in his walls and acting out all the time, and ended up in the very end throwing coffee on his computer. And that was before anybody knew to save anything, and it was his work computer. And he called me up and says, "I don't want this kid around here anymore," you know, which was perfectly wonderful for my son, because he stopped being abused, you know. And
right.
I didn't find out till years later that he had been abused, you know, because his dad had told him I didn't care, and I had went through the Good and Bad Touch and Little Bunny Rabbit with the bathing suits and the whole thing, you know. But his dad convinced him that, you know, I might care about other kids, but I don't care about him.
Right. I
feel
like the kid.
Sounds like you care. Yeah. Sounds like you care.
Well, you know, somebody was trying to say something, but it sounded really muffled.
It's Pamela. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yeah,
I can hear you now.
It showed that she cared. I want to address real quick, trying to tell people, like, from the adult standpoint, or even from the child standpoint, if a child
mm-hmm.
goes to somebody and tries to tell, no matter who these people are, if the people they're telling don't have any inkling about child abuse, that's going to turn them totally off. They're not going to be able to wrap their minds around it, number one. The only people that can really understand child sexual abuse is other survivors, unless they're professional, trained in child trauma, therapy.
Well, we do have, we've talked about this previously on the show, and I agree with you to a point. But we can learn this, and there are some things. If a child comes to you, you know, the worst thing you can do, and I've learned this from being in the advocacy world, and people come to me all the time, not really children, but adult survivors. But if it were a child, you know, the worst thing you can do is get, "Oh, I want to kill him. Oh, God, well, yeah," and just freak out. That doesn't help the child. So there are a few pointers, and Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, we still have a list of what to do if a child comes to you on our website, right?
Yeah, we do. It's under one of the pull-down menus there, I think the middle one.
But Tammy, you're talking about people that know about child abuse, like us. I'm talking about people that have I call them unaffected people. They've never had anything to do with child abuse at all.
You're absolutely right.
Victoria's talking about. Those nuns
mm-hmm.
that Victoria was talking about, they probably mm-hmm. never had anything to do with child abuse, didn't know what it was about, couldn't wrap their minds around it, you know, and it meant
mm-hmm.
nothing to them. You have to tell other people that know.
I was talking to my cousin, and she's a teacher out in Minneapolis, and I was talking to her. I haven't talked to her for years, and I had posted some different things on Facebook about the stuff I'm doing. And she said, you know, it really affected her because the family didn't know that this stuff was going on. A lot of the family, you know.
Right.
And anyway, she said that, you know, it really pulled at her heartstrings and stuff. And because of being a mm-hmm. teacher, she said that they're really working hard, at least in Minneapolis here in Minnesota, on what she called trauma-informed teachers. And I thought, I like
Correct.
That, trauma-informed. And
yes.
I really like that statement because I'm like, yes, educating the community, educating the public. And, I mean,
uh-huh.
that's, to me, a very big component of this whole thing is educating people that have an opportunity to intervene on the child's, you know, behalf.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you know,
and that's
on NASCA, one of our big educational things is trying to get society over the taboo. We're not going to get all of society over the taboo because some of society doesn't want anything to do with it. Doesn't matter. They're not compassionate about it. They don't want to learn about it. And those people we're never going to reach.
Yeah, but,
yeah.
So you know, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I want to make this comment. To kind of pull together what I'm understanding Pamela to say and the comments from Victoria as well. Pamela, I do agree with you that a lot of people, they don't deal with it. They don't know. It's not that part of the world, and it crashes into them. You know, they're you know, it's not even on their radar, and it hits them in between the eyes. And I got that, and that's what I'm understanding you're talking about. And to tag on to what Victoria said, mandated reporters and nurses like the one Adrian dealt with and teachers, mandated reporters, people who have the opportunity to pick up on it, need to have, what did you call it, trauma-informed
yeah,
training.
Trauma-informed training, yes.
Yeah, trauma-informed
mm-hmm.
training. And
mm-hmm.
there are some
mm-hmm.
tools out there. And I agree with Victoria. That should be mandatory. If somebody's going to be a teacher, there is the opportunity. That should be mandatory. You know, nurses, you know, that should be mandatory. That should be part of being a mandated reporter. And, you know, NASCA has a really good list out there of things to do. Like, for example, with Adrian, who was dealing with this, you know, was hit between the eyes with it, you know, if you suspect it. I guess that's the point that I wanted to make. If you suspect it and you think, okay, you know, I may be dealing with a child, you know, I picked up on these reds and I see this. I wonder if. You know, let me ask some more questions. If it is true, what do I do? And that's why, you know, NASCA and other venues are so important, the information that Bill has provided for us, you know, because it does give you, what if it's true and what do I do? You know, there are some tools
right.
out there that can help
mm-hmm.
understand what
right.
to do.
Well,
and, you know,
I have a place here, Tammy, that says create a family safety plan. And there's
mm-hmm.
Guidelines you can help create an environment to protect your family and educate everyone in the family, start talking with your family about sexual abuse, set clear family boundaries, get safe adults involved, know your local resources, how to use them, care enough to reach out for help. I mean, there needs to be a family safety plan in place, just like if you have a fire, you know, and you
right.
need a safety plan to get
out
of that fire.
Right. Let me interject.
Well, I remember go ahead, Bill.
We're coming to the end of this. Just one fact that's going to be important to understand. Earlier, we said that 90% of children, over 90% of children who are abused, it happens at the hands of somebody they know. And 60%, two-thirds of that 90%, it's a family member. Now, in those families, you're not going to really sit down and have a family plan. This is all I'm saying. That's great for a family that's trying to raise nurtured children, and they want to protect the children from the scoutmaster, the priest, the teacher, the soccer coach, and so forth, outside the family. But these are people the kid has come to trust, you know, like the soccer coach. I trust my soccer coach. No, you shouldn't because. So the point is that
The bottom line point is, if we save one kid by doing this kind of work in the course of a year, 2 years, 5 years, boy, we change the world.
Mm-hmm.
And every single kid that we save is valuable to American society.
Can I say something? Out of everything we've talked about, the main, how I got on this course with all this with the child abuse, I talked to as many people as possible about things. There's is help out here for abuse, and that's how I actually got on this, because I was talking to my friends, and she's like, well, I'm going through this and this and this, and she didn't enlighten me about what was going on. And then I gave her a number for NASCA and a couple other things, and this is how we got on this path. So I would never been on this path if I hadn't been going out talking to people about certain things. And it just made me, it's making me know that I really got to get out here and talk to a lot of people, let them know there's places to go.
I agree. I agree.
Thank
and then I want to say too that when my kids were younger and stuff, and I was going through a lot of psychiatric problems and was getting to the point where I was afraid I was going to hurt my kids and stuff, there is a place in Minneapolis called Crisis Nursery, and you can call them up if you're in crisis and you're afraid that you might hurt your kids or you just need a break or whatever, and you can bring them just as they are, you know, dirty clothes, dirty diapers, dirty, whatever. Not that I always did, but you know what I mean? And to have those kinds of things available, and then if the children come in there, and, you know, possibly, you know, say something like, you know, my mom's doing this or my dad's doing this, and that's like an intervention point, but we have that here, you know. And the other thing that I wanted to say is that I'm doing a project. I was trying to get at the end of April because it's Child Abuse Awareness and Prevention Month, but it's going to end up being in May. And my new hashtag is hashtag 365, which is, you know, 1 month is just not enough. We have to be doing this, like, you know, all the time. So my project is to go out to a park out here, and I've got people writing on clothing that, you know, either what happened to them, how they felt, or how they feel about it now as adults. And this is not for children. This is for adults. And anyway, I'm hanging up a clothesline. I've done this before, and I've got a little video, and I basically said, my family always says, don't air your dirty laundry. So now I'm airing my dirty laundry, and I'm inviting other people to air their dirty laundry. And now I want to bring it up on, you know, NASCA, too. And
well,
what I did
cool.
is a lot of people don't want to send me clothing or whatever, and maybe it's partly because they want to be anonymous. So I put some posts on that said, what would you say? And then I asked those three questions. And just within 1 day posting on 5 different groups, I've gotten over 20 responses. So what I'm going
to
do is get some bed sheets. And I'm going to write these
responses. I've got it in.
That's
go
amazing
ahead.
Work you're doing.
I'm going to write these responses in.
We're at the end of the show. We're at the
I'm
end
sorry.
Of the show.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. That's okay. Victoria,
so I
want to
say
one thing
before we go. I want to say one thing before we go. We have three, four ambassadors here from NASCA, and I'm really thankful that the ambassadors called in. Thomasine from Maryland, Darlene from Tennessee, Victoria from Minnesota, myself from Louisiana, and I'm very, very happy that y'all called in. I want to thank you.
Oh, cool beans. Thank you, but thank you all. Well, listen, we are out of time. I've just got a couple of seconds left. I usually do a roundabout, but this has been a wonderful show. We've had a wealth of discussions. Adrian, please call back and stay in touch with us. I'd like to thank Pamela for being our guest speaker, Adrian from Pennsylvania, Mark from Louisiana, Thomasine, Bill, Darlene, Victoria, and Roberta. Thank you for being here. God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.